Hedgehog uses relative time locks so that if they don't have to worry about closing that channel with a relative time lock, it's whenever you do close the channel, now you've got 2016 blocks to sweep the money using the pre-image. Otherwise, I can sweep it after those 2016 blocks go by. And because it only uses relative time locks, it's much more delay tolerant. In the Lightning Network today, you've got hours to settle these things. And often if someone sends a zap to somebody and then they turn off their computer or turn off their phone and go to the supermarket or whatever, they come back and their channel's been force closed because it's not very delay tolerant. It only gives you hours, but the Hedgehog network can give you months.
What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And this show is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the place to buy Bitcoin, the place to learn about Bitcoin and plug your life into Bitcoin. And of course, CoinKite and the Cold Card Hardware Wallet, because you better be holding your own keys, especially in this environment. One day you're going to get to a point where you're like, oh God, I should have done that. I should have listened to Guy. I should have gotten a cold card and I should have just had my auto stack and auto withdrawal from Swan and it should be in cold storage right now. Now I don't have to freak out because I did listen to Guy. You're smart. You did. You followed the link in the show notes and you used the discount code and you did the right thing. Anyway, you should check them out. I've been using them for years and years and years. A huge fan of both companies. But we have a chat episode today, and I'm really excited to share this one with you guys because I was scouring the socials. I think it was on Noster, I believe, when I first came across this. And it was a video with Super Testnet, who is a good friend, I consider a good friend, and amazing, just cool guy who is just always running to the next thing, like just trying to build and create, you know, the next new thing in the space and solve a new problem. And we had him and Robin Linus on the show in like chat 80 something, I can't remember, but it was about BitVM, which was the new way to create basically agnostic programming, enforce any sort of, by literally creating gates in the script, like fundamental hardware gates to then execute software, you could essentially put any program whatsoever, any piece of software as the determining factor, the output of it as the determining factor in the ownership of Bitcoin. That was a brilliant and completely new concept. And it essentially created the idea of being able to use a virtual machine in order to enforce the ownership of Bitcoin. And with the incredible limitations of Bitcoin script on purpose, that was crazy, the fact that that was even possible. And of course, Super Testnet jumped right on it and he was like, okay, let's build this thing, right? Let's actually see if we can make this work. And he did. And so he went on to other cool projects. And I stumbled across this video. And I loved, and I even mentioned this while we were talking, how nonchalant he was about what he was describing, because I was kind of doing a double take. And I was just like, wait, no, this can't possibly work like he's discussing, because if it does, this is huge. Like, this is huge. This could be one of the most important upgrades to Lightning that we may have had since the inception of Lightning, really. And it solves one of the biggest headaches, one of the biggest limitations of Lightning, and one of the biggest causes of force closed channels, actually. And immediately, I scrolled back through and tried, I was like, all right, am I understanding properly what I'm looking at? And then I immediately went and shot a message on Telegram. I was like, dude, we have to have a show. Are you good? And he was like, yeah, I'll do it in a couple of days. And we scheduled it and I got him and I'm so, so very glad I did, because I just needed to pick his brain and understand if what I thought I saw is what I saw. And I think you guys are going to absolutely love this, because I did. And without further ado, I guess we just get into it. This is Chat 97 with Super Testnet. Lightning Offline. Super Testnet, welcome back to the show. For anybody who hasn't listened to previous episode or episodes, I'm not even sure how many times you've been on, and or doesn't know you, why don't you give an introduction, who you are, what you've been doing, what you've been working on.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, Guy, for having me on your show. My name's Super Testnet. I'm an independent freelance software developer. I do a whole bunch of stuff on Bitcoin. I often do stuff on the Lightning Network. I was a consultant for the creation of Noster, and I do a lot of stuff on the Noster protocol. I was a consultant for the creation of BitVM, and I made the first implementation of BitVM, and have improved and helped make subsequent ones as well. And most recently, I created something called Hedgehog, which is an alternative layer 2 protocol that's very similar to the Lightning Network, and we'll learn about today. So those are some of the things I've worked on in the past. And yeah, I think we're here today to talk about Hedgehog, mostly.
Hell yeah. Yeah. One of the big things about Lightning, it's funny because this is one of the security benefits of Lightning, it's one of the reasons why you know it's proof of reserves, and you know that, you know, you have your singular, like the way the structure is, that you know you can actually redeem the payment individually or whatever, is that you have to have both parties online signing and exchanging the secret for each individual payment, right? But I want to explain why, because so many people, like I just recently read something from, I think it's Amboss, that built a way to trick Lightning payments to quote unquote do like a address, a Lightning address that is quote unquote non-custodial, so that they can like interrupt a payment, and like, so there's been like a lot of little like hacks and like little like attempts to work around this both parties need to be online and exactly the same time issue. So I want to start there. Why is it that Lightning cannot do offline payments? We cannot have it asynchronous with the two parties.
Yeah, you kind of can. And some of the hacks you've talked about has demonstrated that there are ways to get around it. But generally in Lightning, you have a sender and a recipient. Typically, they are not connected directly. Typically, they have some kind of Lightning service provider between them. Typically, they several hops. And when you make a Lightning payment, because you don't have a direct connection to your recipient, you have to find a path to them through the network. And what that usually looks like is you're effectively paying Atlas to pay Bob, to pay Carol, to pay Dave, to finally pay Ed, who's your intended recipient. But in order to do that without having to trust Bob, Carol, and Dave, we have them lock up liquidity, the amount, whatever amount you want to pay him. So let's say it's $10 worth of Bitcoin. You have them each lock up $10 worth of Bitcoin in a type of contract called an HTLC. And these are created off-chain using the Lightning protocol. And you can, if Bob, your recipient, authorizes this payment, if he gives them something called a pre-image, then that can flow back through all those states, unlocking every HTLC until it gets to you. He has to be online to do that. Like there's a little secret that he has to give Dave, who can then give it to Carol. Dave unlocks his HTLC, then Dave gives it to Carol, and Carol unlocks her HTLC, and so forth, all the way back to Alice. So if Dave is not, or if Ed is not online, he can't do that, and so their money just gets stuck. The money gets stuck in these HTLCs, which typically last for several hours, 6 hours or so before they time out. And they hate that. They hate having their money locked up because they're using that money to make money on the Lightning Network. And if it's stuck in this one HTLC and they're only getting like 5 sats for it, it just sucks. But you kind of can. Like if you're willing to do that, if you find a set of Lightning service providers or routing nodes who are willing to do this, you can just lock up liquidity for, you know, however many hours it is till you think your recipient's going to get online, and then when he does, he can give the payment pre-image. There's a few. I don't know how Amboss's service works, but I made a service called ZapLocker that uses this model for offline payments, and it was promptly blocked by a whole bunch of wallets. Like, they were like, "This sucks. Like, everyone's getting their channels force closed because their payments are stuck for too long," and so they like blocked payments to ZapLocker. which is cool, all in support of people doing whatever they want with their own software and finding out what the pain points are. So, that I hope that explains why Lightning payments can't be asynchronous.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, Lightning has really kind of had one or two just major drawbacks from a UX perspective. And this has basically been one of the big ones. And because, you know, coming from, you know, Bitcoin in the 2013 sort of days when there wasn't really much discussion, like you just always had block space, you know, like it was, it wasn't scarce really. I mean, we had Satoshi Dice just like dumping enormous amounts of just playing around with stuff in tiny sats amounts just on the blockchain. Because of that, you get this association, you get this understanding that, you know, somebody can just post an address and then walk away. Nobody has to have an online wallet or a server or anything like this. And you can just send money to it. Anybody can donate or send. And we're clearly moving into a space where that can't happen anymore. Certainly not on chain at scale. You know, a lot of donations are small, you know, they're dollars, $2, $5 tops, you know, and you get the occasional $100 from somebody who's generous or just, you know, really cares about the cause. That is never going to work on chain. Like my default fees in this very, very low fee environment are like $2 lately, you know, like that's just kind of the norm. So
if Bitcoin's price would just stop rising, then it would be a lot
easier. I know,
easier.
Right? If it would just keep falling and people would stop using it, it would all be better.
Go back to the days when there were only like 500 people using Bitcoin and everything was cheap and easy. No, I'm just
yeah, playing. Yeah. If only, and you couldn't use it anywhere for anything. But because of that, like getting that UX back, has always been like a big thing, especially with Lightning, because it does scale payments, but it does so with that trade-off, that always online trade-off. So, and I had the episode with Burak, and he tried to explain, you know, as good as could be on the show in audio form, the whole idea of, what was it, connectors and like how the structure and limitations of the ARC system were. And as I understand it, as I watched the video that you posted, is that you're taking one of his ideas and reapplying it in a different way, specifically for like channels with this connector thing. Can you lay out what that is and how this allows us to create, as you call it, hedgehog, which is a different structure of sort of channel and what it looks like and how it behaves?
Yeah, I think I can. So the hedgehog channels involve two primitives. We call in coding, when you're using like a very basic thing to make a more complex thing, we call the basic thing a primitive. Mm-hmm. And hedgehog uses two of them. One of them I first learned about from the Lightning Network. It's called a revocation script. And the other one I first learned about from Burak, it's called a connector output. So let me tell you about both of them and then how I combine them. So a revocable script is a script that goes into a Bitcoin address. Bitcoin addresses typically have some sort of script that you have to satisfy in order to spend the money. Usually it's just if you have the private key to this public key, then you can spend the money. You produce signature proving you have the private key. The Bitcoin network checks it against the public key, and then you're allowed to spend it. You're allowed to do more complicated scripts. And one of them that's used in Lightning is a revocation script, which is where you're allowed to spend the money with your, you know, public key, but only after a certain time lock. So let's say 2016 blocks go by, then you're allowed to spend any money that goes into this address. However, you've got a counterparty, Bob, and you want to, if you're using a revocable script, you want to revoke your ability to safely receive money into this address. So if you just start out with an address that had a time lock on it, then anyone could send you money, and you know, after X blocks goes by, you can take that money. It's perfectly safe. But if you want to make it revocable so you cannot safely receive money into that address, then what you do is you give Bob a secret, and you have a second spend path in that wallet, a second script that says, instead of just waiting 2016 blocks and then I can spend the money, Instead, what we can do is, if Bob knows my secret, if Bob knows this 32-byte string that I send him, then he is allowed to spend the money immediately. He doesn't have to wait the 2016 blocks. And then you've basically transferred that address. Instead of it being safe for you to receive money, it is now only safe for Bob to receive money into that address because he doesn't have to wait. He knows the secret and he can immediately sweep the funds from it. We use hash locks for this in Bitcoin Script. If you're interested, you can go look at how at the Lightning specification, they outline how it works. But we make a script that says, here's a hash of a secret. If you can provide the pre-image that hashes to this value, then you know Bob is able to take the money using his public key. Mm-hmm. So those are revocable scripts. You can make it so that there's a Bitcoin address where I was going to receive some money, or I had the ability to receive money into this address. But if I give the secret to Bob, I can no longer safely do that because in the time it would take me to wait, Bob could sweep the money immediately. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, to just kind of dumb it down for like simple idea is that it's basically we exchange a payment where either we have to have a secret or the other person's signature. And to update it, we give the secret to the last payment so that if we get the signature, if anybody broadcasts, well, now we have all of the pieces of the puzzle to basically steal it. And so we don't want to do that because we want you to own yours and me to own mine. So we don't publish the old one because that's the exchange of that secret basically unlocks the old one for anybody who tries to publish one way.
You say we don't want that to happen.
You're quote unquote, we don't want that to happen.
Bob does. Bob would love it if you sent money into this Bitcoin address where he can take it right away. You'd be happy. But you don't want to do that because
the safe one is the most recent because that secret is unlocking each of the previous ones so that nobody wants to touch it anymore.
The safe one is the most recent one where you have not divulged the secret to Bob. If you receive money into that address, all you got to do is wait and then you can take the money out.
Yes.
So that's a revocable script. We use them in Lightning for the LN penalty mechanism. And I also use them in Hedgehog because Hedgehog is almost exactly like Lightning with one major difference. And the major difference is the other primitive that I want to talk about, which is connector outputs. So this is an idea that I think Barak invented on his own. I have since scoured previous Bitcoin projects and have found things that I think also use them. But he came up with the idea, I think, on his own. And basically, the goal is to make it so that if you have two UTXOs, someone has sent Bitcoin into an address, he can only spend that money if another UTXO exists. If there's a connection between them, so if there's Bitcoin in some other address, you can only spend money in address A if there's also money in address B. So how we do this in Bitcoin, or how Barak figured out how to do it, is by utilizing the fact that signatures can commit to multiple inputs. So whenever you have a Bitcoin transaction, you have a set of inputs and a set of outputs. The inputs are the addresses you're spending from. Often it's just one. And then the outputs are the addresses you're sending to. And usually there's at least two. Usually if you owe somebody $100, you probably have $200 in your Bitcoin address. So you send them $100. And then you create a change address where you send yourself the change, which is going to be $99 minus your fee. So that's what, so Bitcoin transactions have this property where there's inputs and outputs, inputs being the addresses you're sending from, outputs being the addresses you're sending to. And so if you want to do a connector, when you sign your Bitcoin transaction, you can sign it with a signature that requires two inputs. It requires it to consume two different inputs. Two different from addresses, if you will. And by doing that, you make it so that both of those have to exist. There has to be money in both of those addresses in order to send the money to your set of two addresses. So Barak uses this in Arc to make it so that the Arc service provider can only sweep funds from the previous Arc output if he makes the new one. He has to make the new Arc output that gives everyone the new state. And if he does that, a Bitcoin output that is created by that transaction is used as input to the sweep transaction by which he sweeps the previous ARC output.
This kind of work like a pseudo covenant, in a sense. The fact that you're pre-signing or pre-requiring a UTXO to exist that you haven't even established yet, but then to update it, you create the UTXO, you sign and create that address so that you can then use that to sign the next one that doesn't exist yet.
Connector outputs do give us one property that is similar to covenants, in that a covenant typically is thought of as I can only spend, you know, UTXO A if I create UTXO B, right? Like, the only authorized address that the money in address A is allowed to go to is address B, or, you know, you could have a set of them. And connector sort of reverse that. They say, if you put money into address B, now you can spend the money in address A. You can use it as a drop-in replacement for covenants in some respects. They both require the creation of UTXOB, right? But and that's kind of what you want. It's kind of what we want covenants for, is to ensure that UTXOB gets created. But connectors allow us to do it in a way that's compatible with Bitcoin today. And that's nice. They do typically require interactivity. You need to have two parties involved, because if I just put money into address A and then I could create a signature that does whatever I want. I could create a signature that commits to one input or two inputs or whatever. Whereas if there's a multisig, then my channel counterparty can create a signature that's only valid if I create, if I cosign using this connector output. And then I'm the only way I can't just take the money by making my own signature. I have to create UTXOB in order to satisfy this signature that he created. The downside of using connectors is that it requires interactivity. You've got to have two parties, Alice and Bob, so to speak, who are both participants in a multisig, and the covenant's only valid if it involves the two of them. And anyone else can't trust that this covenant is going to be valid, because they could just sign to not create that output. They could sign a new transaction that sends the money somewhere else.
Essentially, without the interactivity of the multisig, it would just be like me signing a transaction and then giving it to somebody else. Like, it doesn't change my ownership of my address. Like, I could still just publish whatever the hell I wanted, and yours would be invalid as soon as I did. There would be no guarantee except for the fact that it requires your signature. So it has to be like a two-party activity.
If I put money into a Bitcoin address, then I give you a signature that says, well, look, here's a signature that proves I can only send this money if I create this other UTXO. You should not trust that, because I can just I can just create a new signature that doesn't have that requirement, right? I've got the private key. I can just make a new signature that sends the money wherever I want, and I fooled you. However, if there's Alice and Bob both have a key in that address, then you can't do that anymore. I cannot just if my counterparty's Alice, I cannot on my own create a signature that overrides, you know, the connector signature. I need her to cosign. So if Alice is involved, if Alice and Bob are both there, then the covenant works between them. They know that this signature is only, or that my counterparty can only move this money if he creates this other output, because they're not going to sign to rug themselves. They're not going to sign to let him do that without making that output. So this allows us to have an equivalent of covenants, an equivalent of, you know, things like CTV or OPCAT, but they only work between two parties. Both parties have to be involved, and only each other can trust that covenant. If they try and tell anyone else, you should trust this covenant, that person could be like, no, because you two could cooperate to create a new signature that doesn't follow the covenant. So I hope that helps. I think we're already lost some members of our audience, but doing the best I can here.
Yeah, as much as can be done. So.
So we have these two primitives, revocable connectors and revocable scripts and connector outputs. And I combined them to create revocable connectors, which is where I'm going to make a Bitcoin signature that spends from multisig. And we got some money in a multisig. Let's say there's 10,000 sats in it. The state of the multisig is that I have a transactions co-signed by you, let's say you and I are the participants, that allows me to take all 10,000 sats out of that multisig. So what I want to be able to do is to revoke that signature and say, all right, this signature is not valid anymore. I can't safely use it. And instead, we're going to create a new state where I send you 5,000 of the sats, where you can withdraw 5,000 of the sats and I can withdraw the remainder. We want to get from state A, where I have the total, to state B, where you have, you know, 50% of it. And we use revocable connectors for this. So when you cosign to for state A to let me have the 10,000 sats, we require that money to first go, before it goes directly to me, it has to go into two Bitcoin addresses. One of them has one of these revocable scripts where I can revoke it. I have the ability to send you a secret and it revokes my ability to safely receive into that money. And the rest of the money, like we only put a little small dust amount into there, like, you know, 330 sats. And the rest of the money goes back into our mutual multisig. So from that situation where, you know, most of the money goes into this revocable address and the rest goes back into the multisig, we co-sign a second transaction that lets me take the money from both of those. So the majority of the money is in the multisig, the rest of it's in this little connector. We sign a transaction that lets me take all of it from both, if as long as I spend both of those, and I have to wait 2016 blocks. So that's the typical revocation script, is what's in that little connector. And we sign a transaction that lets me take money from both of those and give it to me. If I want to change the state now, if I want to update it, all I've got to do is create two new transactions that instead of sending the money to me, they send half the money to you and half the money to me. And I revoke state A. I send you the secret that lets me not safely receive money into that connector anymore. I revoke it. Mm-hmm. So now that I've sent you this information,
basically, if I use that connector now, then just when I still have to wait, it means that I've given all of the information necessary for the counterparty, for you, because we're saying that this is an old transaction now, we've updated it. I've given you all of the information that if I attempt to do that, you can just take all of it. You can just take it from me. So it's not safe for me to do it anymore. It's like giving somebody the private key ahead of time to an address that doesn't exist yet, essentially. Well,
the address exists, it just doesn't have any money in it yet.
Sure. Yeah.
The address doesn't have any money in it yet. The only way it can get money into it, since it's currently in a multisig, is if I cosign to send it into there. But if I do that, it's bad for me because I've sent you the secret that lets you immediately take the money. So I can't really use that old state anymore. You've got the secret that lets you, if I do that, you can just take all the money. Since I can't use state A safely anymore, we're effectively in state B. I've sent you signatures for a transaction that instead of putting the money into state A, it puts it into state B, where you get half and I get half. And you now have the ability to revoke state B. Like, it's just in a Bitcoin address where you have the secret and I do not. And if you want to revoke state B, you just create new Bitcoin transactions that distribute the money in the new way, however you want it to be updated, and send me these signatures so that I can co-sign, and send me your secret so that you revoke state B, and now we're in state C. And we just do that forever. As long as we want this channel to be open, we send each other signatures and secrets that revoke our current state and create the new state, as long as you co-sign. And that's the channel. That's the channel structure. Those are hedgehog channels. But the advantage of this is that you don't need to be online when I create the new state, or at least when I propose it. I can say, here are signatures that create, you know, whatever the new state is. I can send them to you off-chain with my secret. I can put them in an email or whatever. And, you know, 3 days later, you get online and check your email, and you're like, oh, here it is. Here's the new state. I can place it into my wallet, and it says, great. Now you have the ability to close out with this new state, and you're happy. Or you're sad. Maybe it's a bad state, and you're like, I'm not going to do this. I reject it. But the point is, I didn't have to wait for you to get online to send you that information. So it's cool.
The asynchronous payments, the way I was thinking about it was that, you know, we are just updating state, but it's actually not that simple in Lightning. There's a whole extra step with the HTLC. So explain that again, exactly, like why we cannot do this asynchronously easily in Lightning like we can in Hedgehog.
So in Lightning, whenever you make a payment, you have to create an you have to create usually a set of HTLCs, one for every hop along your route. And those HTLCs are stuck in a pending state until the recipient comes online to resolve them. There are people who say the Lightning Network does not have an easy way to charge different amounts for held HTLCs. So if you're a routing node and you get to set your fees for your channels, you get to set how long you're willing to have a payment be pending for on your channel. And once you've set it, it's stuck there until you modify it. Like, so if you say, I will charge 100 sats and I will hold HTLCs for up to 5 hours, that's your policy. And they kind of get upset if you, like my Zaplocker software did, if they max out that policy, if they say, all right, I will take all 5 hours and I will pay you 100 sats, they get mad because they're like, even a guy who only took 5 seconds is also paying me 100 sats and you're taking 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way in Lightning to modify this is if you run two nodes, or at least the only way I know to do it. You can run two nodes, one that only accepts, you know, an hour, and the other one that accepts 5 hours, and you charge different rates for them. And then you have to split up your liquidity between them. And that allows you to get around this limitation of Lightning and have an HTLC that is, charge different prices for different lengths of time that an HTLC can be held for. But the Lightning Network is just not designed for this. Like they haven't designed it to support this. They haven't finished a async payment spec for the Lightning Network. And consequently, if you try and use the tools we have today for Lightning to get around this stuff, it just sucks. It sucks up everyone's liquidity, gets them all stuck. They're not getting paid a sufficient amount for it, and they all get mad and block your software. So Hedgehog, honestly, if you want to do routed payments on Hedgehog, the only way I've thought of to do it is to do the same thing the Lightning Network does, which is create a string of HTLCs from the sender to the recipient and do all this stuff. But I just plan to build it in from the start to support async payments, to have an async payment spec built into it from the get-go. So that the routing nodes on this network know what they're getting into, and they can do it. They can charge different rates for different lengths of time that it might be held for.
This show is brought to you by the Cold Card Hardware Wallet. My favorite setup, which I know I talk about a lot, is the Nunchuck wallet on mobile that just connects directly to or just talks NFC whenever I need a sign. The Nunchuck does not hold my keys. It is securely on my Cold Card. Not connected to the internet, not vulnerable to a phishing email or any malware or anything like that. If I ever need to send a transaction, I just create the transaction on my Nunchuck wallet, and I tap it to my Cold Card, I hit sign, I tap it again, and then off it goes. There is no easier interface and way of interacting that grants a higher level of security, in my opinion, than that right there. It's genuinely incredible to me that we even have this capability in the Bitcoin space. And CoinKite has just made an entire suite of fascinating security and just fun Bitcoin devices and hardware products, like the block clock. Just connect it to your node and have it show the Bitcoin price, have it show the block height, just right there on your desk in this really cool package. If you haven't checked out what they have to offer, you definitely need to, and don't, when you go over there, do not forget that I have a 9% discount code. Bitcoin Audible, all one word, gets you 9% off. And you can go through the link in the show notes, or just remember the discount code, which is not hard, it's just the name of the show. You can go through the link in the show notes to go right there, or just go to the store, browse around, see what you want, get yourself a solid hardware wallet, experience the tap to send with a Cold Card hardware wallet. It's just kind of magical. And get notified for the Q1. I'm really stoked about my Cypherpunk BlackBerry, the new model that's going to be coming out. So check that out as well. Don't forget, 9% off. The link is right in the show notes. Go check them out.
Gotcha. So explain the difference between... So an HTLC would basically still work the same way with a Hedgehog payment. Whereas when we're looking at a Hedgehog update, because everybody only really has, like, there's one state now, like, it's similar to L2 in that way, with a slight difference, not quite everything that L2 does, but actually pretty damn similar in the sense that, like, I'm holding the same information that you are holding. You and I are holding the same thing for what the final valid state of the payment is. Which means for backups and recovery and sort of stuff, it's probably going to be a much simpler construction. So let me see, let me tell you what I saw in my mind and if this actually works like I thought it was when I first watched the video of you like breaking this down, is how could you have, I guess you would need someone to accept the payment on your behalf. Ugh, I didn't think about that. Like, let's say we've got like an LSP, like Breeze or Phoenix or somebody at the end with the user. The LSP has hedgehog channels with me, with you, whatever, with the user at the end. But then let's say in the context between you and me, you are with a different LSP. You're with Breeze or somebody else at a different place in the network. Is it possible to integrate Hedgehog and the traditional Lightning network that we have such that you could send me a payment through the Lightning network and then maybe the LSP on my behalf updates it and then sends me an asynchronous update at the end, like sending me the payment or whatever, and I can receive it while offline and then come back later, look at the update, and then change the balance to my account? Is that something where like it would be easy to bridge? Or do you kind of lose that asynchronicity because it's kind of like you that needs to send me the payment and it still basically means that we have to have the HTLC locked up on the Lightning network?
There are ways to bridge them that I've thought of, but that way I don't think is very safe. Or at least it's not safe if you have a mobile wallet. And the reason why is the same reason why all these payments were failing when people were using my ZapLocker software, which is that the way that HTLCs are constructed in Lightning today, it uses the script uses an absolute time lock, and then the alternative spending path is the one that requires the recipient to reveal a pre-image. So it says something like, let's say that the current block height is 500. This HTLC is going to say something like, if block height 400 or 540 arrives, that's 40 blocks, you know, in the future, and you haven't swept this payment, then I'm allowed to sweep it. The sender is allowed to take the money back. And if the recipient reveals the preimage before then they're able to sweep it without waiting for the 40 blocks to go by. So when a mobile device like my phone creates an HTLC that pays, you know, let's say I'm Alice, I'm going to pay Bob to pay Carol to pay Dave to pay Ed. If I turn off my phone, then I can't update the state of this channel anymore. Like I can't resolve these HTLCs. So if the payment is successful, if, you know, after 40 blocks goes by or whatever, if the recipient Ed finally comes online and sweeps it using the HTLC, that propagates back through all the routing nodes till it gets to Bob, who's the routing node that I use. And Bob wants to resolve this HTLC, only I'm not online. So he's like, block 540 is coming, and you're not online to resolve this HTLC.
Yeah.
I have to close this channel. I have to close this channel and put it on chain so that I can use the pre-image to sweep the money. Otherwise, if block 540 comes and I haven't done that, you can take the money. Like, the sender could take the money and thus steal from Bob. So the fact that we use absolute time locks in HTLCs means that you cannot safely bridge Hedgehog to Lightning by just saying, I'm going to create HTLCs and then forward them and then turn off my device.
Gotcha.
It would have the same problem ZapLocker does, which is that the routing nodes are going to force close the channels with all of the senders.
But Hedgehog uses relative.
Yes. That's the difference. Hedgehog uses relative time locks. So that if they don't have to worry about closing that channel with a relative time lock, it's whenever you do close the channel, now you've got 2016 blocks to sweep the money using the pre-image. Otherwise, I can sweep it after those 2016 blocks go by. And it's not a particular block height.
Interesting. Okay, so one of the things for the audience, one of the things about the Lightning Network is that and this is one of those things too that, you know, if, you know, going back, like if we were talking about like time locks today as like, oh, should we implement a second time lock thing? You would think, oh, we already have absolute time locks. Why do we need relative time locks? You know, like this is redundant. But like, that's actually one of the really creative things about Lightning, is that the only reason it works is because you can use both of them. It's the difference between the relative and the absolute time lock that allows you this window of time to implement your individual, or enforce your individual payment versus the channel state. And you basically already always have this extra window to redeem from the next person in line. You always have like an extra block of time. So the interesting thing with Hedgehog, which I didn't catch until you just mentioned that, is that Hedgehog only needs the relative time locks. It doesn't use any absolute time locks.
And because it only uses relative time locks, it's much more delay tolerant.
Yes, you can wait forever, technically.
Mm-hmm. You can wait forever.
Like, you could have a payment just sit there for 6 days and it doesn't really matter.
You could have it 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months.
Aside from the fact you've got those sats locked up, but if it's like 100 sats or 1,000 sats, who really cares, you know? Because it doesn't really change much. You're just waiting. And what happens if you don't redeem it at all? What happens if it never goes, you just drop it eventually? Like, and it doesn't really change anything else with your state?
Well, eventually, if the sender never comes online to resolve the HTLC, then the recipient, or the person who you forwarded the money to, can force close in the state where either you can spend the money if the relative time lock expires, or he can spend the money immediately using the pre-image. So if he needs to, he can just force the payment to chain. He says, you know what, it's been a month and the sender hasn't come online to resolve this HTLC. I'm going to, after a month, force close this thing and let it go to chain. I say it's much more delay tolerant. Like, in the Lightning Network today, you've got hours to settle these things. And often if someone sends a zap to somebody and then they turn off their computer or turn off their phone and go to the supermarket or whatever, they come back and their channel's been force closed because it's not very delay tolerant. It only gives you hours. But the Hedgehog network can give you months.
Wow, that's so cool. Now, what's the difference between the execution of it? So the way Lightning works, as I'm understanding it right now without looking at it again, is that you send money, especially with like an HTLC or something, is you're sending money to an address with a new set of rules, and then those set of rules let you redeem from that address. So essentially every non-cooperative close requires multiple transactions. Is this essentially the same revocation process as Hedgehog? Is there a smaller data cost at any point in the process, or is it roughly the same, or is there actually an extra UTXO in there because of the connector? Like, what's the varying difference in enforcing the ownership in the channel?
Typically with Lightning, there are two transactions to an uncooperative. Usually three, because usually you.
Is it three?
Because usually, if there's an uncooperative closure, it means there's an HTLC attached to that channel, and then you also have to resolve the HTLC.
Oh, which is a whole new path. Yeah, that's right. So it would be three technically with an HTLC. You're right. Yeah.
And I think it's the same with Hedgehog.
Yeah,
I think it's the same. Because you'd have the...
I figured it would be, but yeah.
Yeah. Assuming you're doing it for the same reason, that there's a stuck HTLC, then you're going to have to do... Mm-hmm. The first transaction would put the money into the revocable connector. The second transaction would spend from the revocable connector using the pre-image. And then that creates the current state where there's an unresolved HTLC. And then the third transaction would resolve it. So I think it'd be about the same. It might be... The scripts in Lightning are larger than the scripts in Hedgehog. But Hedgehog also has two inputs to every transaction, well, to one of the transactions, whereas Lightning only has one. So I think, I don't know, it probably balances out, I would not be surprised if it edges in the favor of Lightning being more efficient in terms of chain space.
Gotcha.
Especially now that they're upgrading the Taproot channels, which have smaller scripts.
Yeah, that's true. But then at the exact same time is that with any sort of asynchronous payment or any sort of hiccup, you're much more likely, it might actually balance out in the favor of Hedgehog, just in the less likely needing to actually close stuff because you don't have the absolute time lock to worry about.
There's fewer occasions to do a unilateral closure
to
in Hedgehog,
to close.
Or at least,
yeah.
You know, this is all theoretical right now. Who knows? After, well, while I'm building this thing, things might change.
With that, so with asynchronous payments, it seems like I'm understanding the architecture of asynchronous payments when we're talking about just between you and me as like a channel. But is it any different? Is the problem of asynchronous payments any different when we are paying across Bob, Peter, and Charlie, you know, to route through when we have the HTLC? Or is it still just you send me the piece of information necessary to redeem, and then whenever I open up my email or whatever, or see that I have that payment received, then I can just redeem it, and then it just kind of continues down the line. So it's still just stuck in an HTLC with all the intermediate parties, but nobody's in a rush. It's not like super important to, you know, close it out immediately. And when I come online, it just gives the relevant information necessary to then close that HTLC. Am I understanding that right?
That is a way to do it, that I'm currently working on making that exact thing that you just said, where the only difference between the current Lightning Network and Hedgehog with a routed payment would be that Hedgehog is willing to tolerate, or Hedgehog routing nodes are willing to tolerate and charge more for having their money stuck in pending HTLCs for a long time. So that's what I'm currently building. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's exactly as you described. Same thing as Lightning today, except I'm going to have built-in tools for them to charge more money for longer duration HTLCs. However, I thought of another way to do routed payments that doesn't have money stuck in HTLCs for meaningful amounts of time. And it borrows some ideas from the world of eCash. And I think it would be useful for me to tell your users about it, because then I could get feedback from people and see what they see what people think of this idea. Is this a good time to do that?
Mm-hmm. Go to town. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Cool. So when you're creating, let me tell you about one of the things that happens with eCash. If you've ever used eCash before, it has a very similar user experience to what I'm making with Hedgehog, in that you deposit money into a eCash server. It's equivalent to depositing money into a Hedgehog channel. When you want to send someone money, you create a string that deducts, and when you create this string, you deduct, let's say, 100 sats from your eCash, account, so to speak. I know eCash doesn't actually have accounts, but you put 100 sats into the string, and then you send it to whoever you want it to go to. And they're supposed to come online at some point and paste it into their wallet. However, there's like a race condition here. If you decide that you want to take back this money, there's nothing stopping you from taking that same string you sent them, and before they get online, you can paste it into your wallet and take that money instead. And in Cashew, mm-hmm. we just are like, okay, well, he took it back. He just changed his mind. He didn't want that money to go to that person after all. If he didn't come online within a reasonable amount of time to take it, then that's his fault. I think I can build the same thing with Hedgehog. And how I would do it is, when you want to send someone money, instead of getting information from them about like their public key and then creating a series of HTLCs that pass from hop to hop until it ends up with them, instead what you do is, inside of your Hedgehog channel, the second transaction where you would attach an HTLC, instead you create a new output that off-chain that is a new Hedgehog channel with your LSP, your LSP being one of the key holders, and the other key holder is just a private key that you made up. You just make up a private key, and you make that the key holder in this new virtual Hedgehog channel. And if you do that, you put 10,000 sats in it that are redeemable by the private key that you made up. The LSP can treat that channel as a perfectly valid Hedgehog channel, because at any time they can force close, they can do a unilateral exit and put that channel on chain, since they have all the keys and signatures they need to do that. So the LSP can treat that as a perfectly valid channel, and then you just send the private key to that channel to your intended recipient in something that looks like a Cashew note. And if they get online in a reasonable amount of time, they can use that private key to send the money from their side of the channel to the LSP's side in exchange for a set of HTLCs that they immediately settle, giving them that amount of money. And if they don't, if they take too long, if they take, 5 days go by and they haven't done it yet, you have a copy of the sender has a copy of the private key as well. So the sender can just, all right, he's taken too long. I'm going to stake this back and just send the money to myself. And so if you do this, you can have equivalent to asynchronous payments that work just the same way eCash does, where either party can spend the money, the sender or the recipient can. But then you don't actually lock up HTLCs until you're ready to resolve them. Like the recipient can resolve them immediately.
Yeah. Now, would you ever actually have to open the channel?
You wouldn't have to put it on chain.
If nobody was forcing it, you would never have to put it on chain, right? You would just put it in, basically convert it, show that you had the redemption for it, and then you could make a payment in your normal channel for it. Is that right?
Once you create this virtual channel, the LSP can resolve it anytime they want. They have all the signatures they need and all the transactions they need to do it. So to them, it is just as good as a confirmed payment. The only way it gets erased is if they co-sign to erase it. So they can treat it as just a valid channel and then interact with it on that basis. So if someone wants to send the money out of it in exchange for a Lightning payment or an HTLC or whatever, they can do that and then show that it's resolved.
This is technically a benefit of, this is how you would actually use it kind of like a covenant. Because what you're doing is you're creating a virtual channel that you can treat as if it's already open.
Yeah.
Even though it's not open, simply because you have to have that input there for the old one.
Yeah, it's a bit like how I was talking about earlier, that you can emulate covenants in a two-party setting. Like, both the parties know that they can trust this covenant because they would have to co-sign to override it. And once you have that LSP there in the middle, who's able to treat these as a real valid covenant, he can like extend that. He can be like, all right, well, then I'm willing to treat these virtual UTXOs and anything that happens inside them as, perfectly valid payments. And he's able to exchange them for Lightning payments or whatever. So you extend that covenant out to other people by means of the LSP.
Oh, wow. That would be... This really does kind of simplify the construction. There's probably, I wonder how that would work in implementation. Like, it seems like that would be cleaner than HTLCs.
Well, it would involve them at some level, but only late in the game.
It would involve them through the process. Yeah. Sure. Okay. With the connector nodes, you would still need them, but like the end result would still be a virtual channel at the edge. That would then just be redeemed back onto the current Lightning.
I'm currently writing code for the HTLC part. And then once I have code for the HTLC part, I can make the like virtual embedded channel part and see if it works. But at least in my mind, it works. And I'll find out if it works in reality.
Swan Bitcoin has the full suite of Bitcoin financial services. You can instantly buy with your bank account or wire transfer any amount of Bitcoin up to $10 million worth. And you can easily set up what I have been doing for ages, which is an automatic purchase of Bitcoin on a weekly or monthly basis. You just pick your time frame and then automatically withdraw it to your cold storage. And still they have free withdrawals to self-custody, which I was sure would be gone by now. But you should always treat any custodian as a point of failure. And luckily, you won't have to go anywhere for all of the information and advice you need for why you should withdraw and how to do it safely, because Swan Bitcoin has all of the resources you need and will regularly remind you. About 80% or more of their customers automatically withdraw their coins. That is an amazing feat, if you ask me. Then they also have the Swan IRA if you have a traditional IRA and you want to get it allocated to Bitcoin. And there's so much more. With Swan Private, they have inheritance planning. You also have Swan business accounts, and you can even do Bitcoin as a part of your employee benefit plans. They have an advisory. They have the Swan Vault, a multi-sig service for those who want to have the benefits of holding the majority of their keys, but still also want to be able to rely on a trusted institution in the case of an emergency or a disaster. If you haven't started into Bitcoin yet, Swan is an amazing place to begin. Go to swan.com/guy. The link will be right there in the description. Again, that is swan.com/guy. And they will know that I sent you, and my beautiful face will be right there at the top of the page to greet you. I am a longtime user myself, and a huge thank you to Swan for supporting this show, and I definitely recommend you check them out.
Dude, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's a really significant simplification for how Lightning works, in my opinion. Like, and it solves a really big drawback of Lightning. And I love that that didn't register until we were talking here, that the need to drop, or the ability to drop absolute time locks, that's really kind of one of the critical keys
in order to make it mobile
what
friendly.
This does, in order to make it everything friendly, to make it time friendly. Now, I'm curious, is there actually a way to charge like a pseudo interest rate, like a time decay interest, so that if somebody comes back online within the hour, it only charges one sat fee? If it takes them 2 hours, it charges them, 10 sats. If it takes them a day, it charges them 50 sats. Like, is there actually a way
Maybe.
To charge
there might be.
A pseudo interest rate?
There might be. I'd have to think about it. But most things are possible if you try really hard. And it does sound like a hard problem. Yeah. However, I don't think I need to build it, because if I make it so that if I make this other thing I'm talking about, then you never need more than the minimum, which is just one block. Because mm-hmm. it, within that time, the HTLCs are only going to be around for one block period, or I guess you need 3 blocks, because otherwise one block can happen really quickly. You only need a very small amount of block time for them, because you're never holding the money in stuck HTLCs on this method.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know. Now that I think about it, in Lightning, I have found it very useful to use stuck HTLCs for other purposes. So I might want to make it so you can do it anyway, just so that other people can build stuff that I haven't thought of.
Make it stuckable.
Make it stuckable. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then I would need to make it so you can charge more for them.
Yeah.
Which means I have to solve a hard problem.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, I will think about
there's,
doing
there's
that.
There's a lot to unpack there. This is. I feel like this is the beginning of a really significant update just in using that the connector model.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also lends itself to just showing just how powerful covenants could be, and in what ways when you have this clear way to attach an external ownership or just like a very explicit passive thing. That you can sign over something to me. Like this is basically a use case of covenants. Like, you could do this with covenants.
Yeah.
Exactly like you're doing it with connectors. You've just figured out a way. You Burak and you and like the combination of all of these things is, oh, we can actually do this without the covenant itself in a pseudo way, just by having the input, which is really, really clever. It's just like it's signing and thinking one step ahead,
mm-hmm.
so that you have to then create the information in order for the signature to be valid, because you're exchanging signatures to prove ownership. It's really clever. In doing that, one of the other really neat things is that it just kind of behaves like eCash, is that you kind of have like this cash token that you can just kind of redeem.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally like cash, like
oh, you do need a channel.
The thing itself is that of course you need the channel. Of course you need the channel. I mean the payment, it behaves when you receive it like eCash, so that you can have it entirely offline. You can, by any channel necessary, you can exchange the information, and then you have everything you need to just pull it in your channel to basically say, this is mine now.
It's
a powerful, powerful idea.
When I'm using it, it feels very much like I'm using eCash. But it has the drawback mm-hmm. of the Lightning where you need inbound capacity. And, people have asked mm-hmm. me, does this fix the inbound capacity problem? It does not. You still need that.
Yeah.
And that's like,
yeah.
Other than needing to be online, like to me, the three big problems with using Lightning, the things I'm trying to figure out ways to fix are asynchronicity, where both parties need to be online. That's the main reason why everyone uses custodians, because mm-hmm. they can't run a server
yeah.
or a node.
Yeah.
Or they can, but they don't want to.
That's the big thing to me. 100% is that this is the reason why everybody has to use custodians. This is why 90% of Nostr is the lack of being able to use a Lightning address, because Phoenix is easy.
Yeah.
Breeze is easy. Like, the LSP model is genius. It works, and it's a way to separate the service of like channel management and liquidity and all of that stuff from ownership, from custody.
Yes.
This fixes that such that basically Nostr could be all non-custodial with the same user experience, the same degree of
minus one
it
thing,
just works.
Which is the other 10%. The other 10% of why using Lightning kind of sucks is the inbound capacity problem, which is where if someone sends you a zap for 100 sats and you don't have capacity, then you have to pay. It's usually they have to pay Phoenix. Like, it'll tell them, you know, you need to send more because otherwise this guy doesn't have enough money to receive this. And it's like, I don't want to send him, you know, an additional 10,000 sats to open a new channel for, or to splice in this new stuff. So that kind of sucks. And the Hedgehog does not fix that. Like, it fixes the big problem, but it doesn't fix this other, like, that'll become the new big problem, is the inbound capacity.
Yes.
So there still will be a role where I think people will still prefer to use custodians even after Hedgehog, because otherwise they'll be able to send people money offline, but the LSP will still say, sometimes, you know, you've got to send an extra amount to get them a new channel or to splice it in. And then they'll be like, I don't want to do that, or I don't want to put that on my senders. So then they'll just use a custodian. And then the third thing is pathfinding.
Yeah.
Often, if I want to send someone a payment and they're not using a big node, if they're using one of their own nodes, I can't find a path to them, even with route hints, because I have to find someone who has enough money to forward it to the next guy who has enough money, and so on. And Hedgehog doesn't fix that either. So it just fixes the one big problem, or at least it provides an alternative way to solve this big problem. And that's good. I'm happy to solve one thing. Then I can work on the next two things. And other people can work on them too.
Yes. Yes. For sure. That's awesome. That's really, really exciting. I'm curious because, and in fact, I thought I was going to start this way, but I want to route back around to it. Because the last time you came on the show, we were talking about BitVM. And how we could create new structures and stuff. And immediately with this whole Hedgehog idea and trying to get around custodians or getting the best, the benefit of both, you know, the best possible combination. Like, I'm already thinking of like, okay, well, what if you could have eCash as a bridge network between Hedgehog users and stuff, and you could accept eCash up to a certain balance and then update Hedgehog channels or something like that. Like, and get kind of like this great user experience of kind of unconfirmed funds in small amounts, so that if you don't have the liquidity, you're holding eCash, you're holding this kind of like almost payment mechanism where it's still trusted, but it's only ever going to be trusted up to $50 worth of value. And then you close out and open up a virtual, open up a new channel or change the liquidity or something, or just... it just gets batched in for the sake of just making it as chain efficient as possible. You know, how do we use as little space on the time chain as possible? Well, let's just batch it throughout the day. But anyway, in that same sense,
you started out that monologue with a question, and now I lost the question somewhere.
I know. I was coming back around because I realized I did that. So going back to that makes me think again about BitVM is how we can create these alternative structures of enforcement to give us, you know, something that behaves like an eCash network, but still actually, even though it may cost to take it to chain, still actually have that redemption power and then move it to Hedgehog channels as the better way to hold it after a certain threshold of value. So going back to BitVM,
you did it
because
again.
That's what we talked about last time.
I lost the question again.
I did. is BitVM is what's been going on with BitVM and what kind of improvements and stuff since the last time we talked have there been? Are things moving as good or not as good? Like where is the whole state of that space?
So as a reminder, I'm not on the BitVM team. Robin Linus has himself and his two employees. I think they're Tierro, or it's not Tierro, it's some other guy whose name starts with a T, and a German fellow named Lucas are on his team. They're the BitVM team. I'm an independent guy who also thought BitVM was cool. And because I make stuff really quickly in Bitcoin, yes. I rushed out an implementation right away, almost before his white paper was ready. I'm not privy to the internal discussions of where they're at. All I have is the information that they share publicly. And occasionally I do a phone call with him just because we're friends and he tells me about different stuff they're working on. But
cool.
From my perspective, currently the only version of BitVM that actually works right now is the one I made, right? So I was just talking to someone earlier. They were like, BitVM 2 came out and it's way better than BitVM 1, which of course is way better than Super's thing that he made as a proof of concept. And I'm like, no. But BitVM 1 and BitVM 2 are still both theoretical and mine works. Like mine's out on the chain right now and you can use it to run the limited set of programs that I've written for it. But it works, you know, and mine's not theory, it's fact. So I don't let anyone say that their theoretical BitVM is better than mine until they make it reality. So that said, where I'm at, I used, you know, the skills that I've learned with working on BitVM stuff to make an implementation of the game Tic-Tac-Toe. And I did a presentation on my YouTube channel where I show people how they can use the BitVM techniques to create a game of Tic-Tac-Toe and play it. Like the winner gets, the two parties put some money in and the winner of the game gets the money. And of course, you wouldn't really want to do Tic-Tac-Toe even on a second layer. It's too simple of a game and you always know who's going to win you always know it's going to end in a draw. But you can use the principles from this video I made to learn how to develop BitVM applications yourself using the tools that I've created. If you want that, that's what I think is the best thing to go to learn how to do BitVM stuff. However, the tools I've made are not very practical and they're inefficient. Like if there's a dispute, the cost of doing stuff on chain on mine is really expensive because I'm not doing things the efficient way that Robin's team is theorizing about. So on that front, the latest state of BitVM stuff and in the theoretical, you know, efficient model, they figured out a way to get rid of the N of N trust assumption, where you have to trust that at least one party in a group of key holders is honest. So the previous, in BitVM 1, the way that they were going to make a sidechain with it involved having, you know, you've got the prover and the verifier in BitVM, and if the prover says that, you know, here's the set of withdrawals that are supposed to happen on the sidechain, and here's my proof that I've processed them, the verifier is able to take the money if the verifier can prove that the prover did it wrong. And the way they were going to make a sidechain out of this is by having a lot of provers make a music key together, and then you could have like 100 different provers, or not provers, I meant the verifiers. Ugh, now verifiers. I'm confusing everyone. Yep. 100 different verifiers create a music key together, and then if any one of them is honest and disproves the honesty of the prover, they can burn his funds. And this incentivizes the prover to be honest and process withdrawals correctly. They figured out a way to make that not happen so that anyone, without being a member of this N of N key set, set of key holders, can challenge the prover and say, you didn't process my withdrawal. And here's the proof. And then if they prove that he didn't do it, they can burn his funds, which is a massive improvement.
That's a huge improvement. Yeah. It means that interactivity is not necessarily there anymore, because if you have music, you basically, at some point, unless of course
the interactivity is still there, but you have to trust yourself instead of having to trust these key holders.
No, what I was meaning is that you don't have to be there to add your key to multisig.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
Which is a huge coordination problem. The more people you add to it, if it's now passive, you still have to be there to verify and challenge, but you don't have to be there during the construction to add your key as being a part of the key holder, which most people wouldn't be. They would be quote unquote users, and you'd have, you know, people who specifically we're running nodes, but I mean, just simplifying that whole orchestration is a big deal. Like that's huge.
You say that, and it's my understanding that there is now, in order to achieve this property, there is a setup ceremony. And the setup ceremony involves getting as many people as you can to co-sign the set of challenge transactions. And The challenge transactions are co-signed in advance. So you don't, as long as, you know, they don't have to have any money, they don't have to have any key holders, and they don't have to stick around. But you could do a setup ceremony where you get as many people involved in this as you can. And as long as one of them deleted their private key, they can't steal anymore. They can't do anything. So that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. But, I think most people, or at least I think, a setup ceremony where they don't have to stick around is better than one where they do. I like that.
For sure.
Which is BitVM1, sure. They do have to stick around.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't think, maybe we did talk about this last time, because as soon as I heard the BitVM idea, and just the idea that you could do any sort of arbitrary computation and stuff, is my immediate thought was like, okay, how do you implement eCash as a BitVM so that you can redeem the essentially the eCash token, and maybe even in the construction it still has to update like a virtual hedgehog channel, like it has to update a channel or something to make it go to a UTXO at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But how could you do that? Because to me, that's the perfect implementation. Like, it's not perfect. You know, there's BitVM itself just has a limitation of like the cost of enforcement. But regardless of getting the privacy benefit of eCash, of having the sort of token model where you can pass this cash around with other people, and they don't have to necessarily be online in order to, you know, make that exchange. And then the eCash implementer, the service provider, can be contested by any one of its users. Like anybody can prove that the eCash wasn't valid eCash if they ever tried to redeem or steal stuff that wasn't theirs. Like, that's kind of like the holy grail in my mind of if you need to go to court and prove your ownership, you can. But because anybody can go to court, 99.9% of the time, there's just not a problem. Like, nobody's going to fight it, right?
Yeah. I don't know how to answer your question the way that with all of the variables that you've put into it. But I do want to mention a fourth problem with Lightning that the Hedgehog also does not solve, and that I forgot about when I mentioned the big three, is privacy. And eCash really solves the privacy problem, or at least with the trade-off of custody. It makes it so that the mm-hmm. signing server can't tell who's receiving money or how much they're receiving and all this stuff. Hedgehog does not do that. So I try to emulate the user experience mm-hmm. of using an eCash server, but the server can see everything. None of it's blinded.
Yeah,
and I talked to Callie.
It's not eCash from a privacy perspective. Yeah. It's very much like a normal Lightning payment. Yeah,
I talked to Callie before I made that video. I talked to him to see if he knew any ways to just blind the server so he can't see all this stuff, and he didn't immediately think of anything. And when I talked to Robin and Linus about this stuff, he says zero knowledge proofs solve everything. So I suspect that there probably is a way to make my server blinded, but I don't know how to do zero knowledge proof stuff as well as like Robin's team does. So maybe at some point they'll take a look and see if they can fix the server and make him so he can't. So he's like an eCash, even more like an eCash server.
Man, I tell you what, I don't know if it's just like, I'm so used to hearing it from like the crypto space. Like, it's almost always attached to a shitcoin, but it drives me crazy. Like, I read a lot of the thing from Critia or whatever you want to call it, however it's pronounced. Citria, thank you. Citria, how that works, but I just can't quite wrap my head around it, and I'm used to ZK proofs being, here's our token.
Yep. Well, I think the Citria people, I think they come from the world of Ethereum developers, where that's kind of what you do. You run something, call it a L2, and then you have a token everyone has to buy. So I don't fully trust the Citria people either. In fact, I did a debate with the Citria guys on Paul Stort's show, where I called them scammers.
Oh, really?
I said that they were. And they, in the course of the show, they convinced me that they're not scammers. they don't have an alternative token that they're selling with this stuff, and that they have actually their software does what it says it does. But Robin still doesn't trust them. You know, he thinks that they are trying to convince people that they have something they don't.
Overselling.
Yes, and in a scammy way, or at least that's what the impression I got from him. So I wouldn't trust, although I have said publicly that the Citria people are not scammers, do your own research. So check it out for yourself. They might be.
We don't know for sure. We don't know for sure. Well, I don't want to hold you forever. And I know we had like a little bit of an overlap there in the middle because of the lost stuff. And I'll figure out how to edit it together. I think we gracefully put it back together, hopefully.
Yep.
But this is fascinating. I kept thinking that like there's so many moving pieces, and I still just feel like we haven't explored the space of what is available right now. We're so constantly looking at like, oh, well, we can implement this and we need this other tool and we need this other thing. But like, look at what we can still accomplish without doing any of that. Mm-hmm. Like by just utilizing the tools we currently have. And this was a really, I mean, as soon as I watched it, I feel like, and you know, you're always like pretty humble about it and very like matter of fact and like frank. So I was kind of like laughing when I was watching the video because you're like, well, here's this thing that I think is kind of neat. And then I'm like watching this and I'm like, wait a second, this is like asynchronous payments. This solves a huge problem of Lightning,
and you're like not thrilled. I should have been like,
I'm always thrilled. I'm always like, I'm always like super stoked about it. And then you're just like, well, I think it's kind of neat. Hope you guys like it. And then shit cracked me up. I was laughing.
It took me a while to get to that point. Like when I first came up with the idea, I was actually came up with it in a conversation with Waxwing about this thing he had called Pathcoin, when I was trying to implement it and found a problem, and then this Hedgehog stuff solved it. So when I was talking to him about it and I came up with the idea, I was like, there's no way this can work. You know, this channel structure has to have some flaw. So then I implemented it and I got all the way to the end and it did work. And then I was really mad. I was like, not like crazy. So I called Callie and I was like jumping around. I was staying in this hostel and they like came up to where I was and they were like, you have to stop. You're like thumping on the ceiling. But I was crazy about it with Callie, hilarious. and then I finally made the video, and I tried to keep a calm, rational.
Tone it down a little bit.
I did.
Tone it down a little bit.
I did, and it's good.
Well,
I think it's good.
It was great, and you had me jumping around. but yeah, this is super fucking exciting, man. Let everybody know how to stay up on this, where you're going to do updates. Like what's your plan? Are you going to build a full implementation of this? Like usable? Does this need funds? Because this seems like something that would be worth like putting real capital toward to me. What are next steps? What's your plan? Do you have one?
It's good. Yeah, I've got, if anyone wants to contribute funds, I do need to eat. And the last time I did get money recently for Zaplocker, which is sort of a precursor to this. It was my, it was an attempt to do offline payments. I got a grant of a Bitcoin from Human Rights Foundation for solving number 6 of their, what's it called? Their Bitcoin bounties. And so Evan Kaloudis got some money out of that, and I got some money out of that. And that has been really helpful. So I'm good for like another 2 years as far as having money to eat. But I will need to eat after that as well. So if anyone wants to contribute some money toward me so that I can keep doing this stuff, that would be great. My Bitcoin address is in my Twitter profile and my Nostr profile. So if you search for Super Testnet on Nostr, 2 words, you'll find me there. On Twitter, you have to do super_testnet, find me there. That'd be great. Then I can.
I'll have your impub in the link or in the description and stuff.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
And then, so what does it take to build it? Well, the really difficult thing with me is that I'm always coming up with new stuff. Like I've always got new inventions that I'm coming up with, or I get really excited by someone else's invention and I want to make it. I cannot guarantee that I will do my implementation. I'm currently making a wallet called Snuffle. That has support for Hedgehog channels and Lightning integration, so you can do both. In order to do that, I need to write the server side software, and I need to do the embedded channel thing, and I have to finish the HTLC thing, which I'm almost done with the HTLC thing for integrating with the Real Lightning Network.
I have a quick question with the Snuffle wallet. Is if it's got Lightning and Hedgehog, is there a reason why you can't do a normal HTLC?
No, you can
over Hedgehog.
You can do normal HTLCs inside Hedgehog.
So that if you received a normal Lightning payment, you just lose the benefit of Hedgehog.
Yeah,
but if you received a Hedgehog payment, you could receive it as Hedgehog. Interesting. Because fundamentally, the channel itself isn't any different. It's the update structure that changes, which means that you could use either one.
You can put regular Lightning HTLCs inside of a Hedgehog channel in its second transaction that actually settles into the current state. And then you can resolve them the same way Lightning does. But you lose the cool properties that Hedgehog brings.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it anyway.
That's crazy.
So it is a Lightning wallet. I'm working on Snuffle. And I need to make the server software so that I can do the extending the covenant stuff out to multiple people and mm-hmm. make the virtual channels kind of work like eCash does. Then I think I'll be but that's a lot of work. And the problem is that it will not be surprised if before I'm finished with that, either I invent something else or someone else invents something else, and then I get excited about that. So guarantees. If it'd be great if someone else wants to make it, their own implementation of what I'm doing. Have at it. Mm-hmm. The code I've written so far is on my GitHub. You can use it as a reference and then write it better. Make your own. And then we'll have competition. Then I won't be the only one working on this. Give it a try.
In fact, if anybody wants to reach out to me, if anybody is interested in that and wants to do the tedious work of getting this to like a final thing, because I want to give Super Testnet the ability to explore new ideas, because that's where he really shines, is going to the next thing that he's excited about, building a quick implementation, making it work, proving that it works, and then going on to the next exciting thing. So I would be very, very happy to talk to somebody who wants to take the new cool thing that he explored, the Hedgehog in this instance, and how do we flesh this out completely? How do we start actually utilizing this, building a client for it? Because that would be a huge thing, and it would be interesting to see updating, like slowly migrating things toward this architecture and how we could kind of bridge the gap and kind of get the best of both worlds while we have it, the liquidity of the traditional Lightning, but begin to add in the features of Hedgehog. So definitely hit me up. Anything else you want to add, Super Test?
I do.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Many people who watch this will wonder why I named it Hedgehog. And it's one of the common mm-hmm. questions I get. So there's not a huge reason for it. I think hedgehogs are cute. I think they're very cuddly. They're known for being relatively fast. I think all of those are desirable features of a monetary transfer protocol. I would like my money to go fast, cute, and cuddly over the network to the next person. I think there's a lot of I think all the Lightning memes are used up. There's a bunch of LSPs like Voltage and Strike who've used those. There's like mm-hmm. wallets named like Zeus and Olympus that have taken all the good Lightning puns are taken. So I wanted to give some new source of puns. And hedgehogs are, there's lots of things you can do with them. Like I've already come up with Borrow and or Burrow and Snuffle, and there's a lot of cool things they have. Like they've got the little spines in their back. They've got emojis. They've got movies. They've got TV shows. They've got cartoons, video games. So there's lots of fodder for people to use to make
cool
stuff.
Rife with content.
Rife with content. That's why I picked the name Hedgehog. So in case anyone's wondering, there's nothing particularly analogous about it other than that they are fast. So.
That's great. I love it. All right, dude. Thank you again so much for coming on the show. We'll be doing this again, I'm sure. And when you find the next cool thing and start building on that, or when there's new updates to explore and looking into stuff. Thank you for just keep continuing to build and explore in this space, because we wouldn't have Hedgehog. We wouldn't have. This is a fascinating idea. I think this is a big deal.
And BitVM would still be a theory.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Hell yeah.
Thank you guys.
Absolutely,
and thank you. You keep doing what you do. And I hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode, that chat as much as I did. I am already talking to multiple people about this, and this is something that I think needs a lot of eyes on and a lot of attention. And I want to hear other people's thoughts on this. I want people to look at it and ask me or tell me what they see. What are the vulnerabilities? How good is this model? Like, let's test this. Let's super test net it. And it's a dad joke. Let's literally look into this very seriously, because this would be a huge step forward for Lightning, and some of the major headaches with Lightning's operation and the limitations of that asymmetric communication, or the lack of asymmetric communication, finally solved. And if we could do that, that would just be such a huge step for so many different reasons. So please explore. I'm going to have the link, the original video that I saw, in the show notes. Obviously, follow Super Testnet on Noster and on X. I will have both of those links in the show notes as well. And don't forget to check out our amazing sponsors who make this show possible and let me do this let me get excited and just take the day to figure out something about hedgehog channels and talk to Super Testnet so that I can bring it to you guys. I love what I do, and sponsors and you guys make it possible. So check them out. Links and all of those goodies are in the description. And we will close this one out. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys.